Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 590 of the Drunk Dashers podcast. I'm your host, as always, I'm Tyler. And join me with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Sir Colonel Gables. It's always weird when we do these back-to-back recordings because, like, I always like, "What's up, buddy?" But it's like, this is our second show. We already know what we're up to. We're here for a specific reason. Gables, how you feeling, buddy? We are halfway through our game of the year.
Oh,
how are we feeling,
God,
so far?
So far, you know, I'm. So far, it just feels like it's gone through pretty quickly. It's gone through pretty quickly and stuff. I mean, there were really not too many like big surprises or something, you know, in terms of like our lists immediately, other than the fact that I thought that Spider-Man 2 was going to be a little bit higher in your list than like where it was. But yeah, man, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah. I can't believe you spoiled in the last one that the Destiny 2 expansion was your game of the year. It's too bad you spoiled that for everybody.
Oh, shit, dude.
No, sorry. Anyways, Gables and I are here. If you missed or you just hop it in here, Gables and I are doing our top 10 list of the for best games to come out in 2023. This is part two. Last week we did part one. It's only been a few minutes for us, but it's been about a week for you guys. So if you guys want to check out part one, go back, check it out, go, you know, like follow, subscribe to wherever you're listening to us at, on whether it's on Apple, Spotify, any podcast service. We're on all of them. YouTube, you know, like, follow, subscribe, please, there, click the bell, all that fun stuff. But you know, Gables and I, we just two guys that get together every week, have a couple beers, and we talk about video games, everything we love about them. And you know, this time of year, it's my favorite podcast session we do every year, where we rank our top 10 games of the year. These aren't necessarily like the 10 best games we play. It's just our 10 favorite games we played this year.
Yes.
So like, we're not going to come out, you know, review scores and all that shit. Sometimes it's just vibes, baby. It's all it is. You know, as Gables likes to remind us all the time, we're in our mid 30s now. Right now, we've been doing this for over a decade now. We're almost 600 episodes. Right now, it's just about vibes. All right, we're just vibing, trying to have a good time and not feel old. There's a hair on my goddamn glasses because my dog came over and it's driving me goddamn nuts.
I know, it's been a hair that's been trying to come through my freaking eye.
Ah. Anyway, we're fucking nerds with glasses. But anyways, I'm dealing with the cold still, so I will do my best to not cough, sneeze, blow my nose, all that fun sniffles, heavy breathing into the microphone throughout the show. I will do my best, but I can't promise anything. But I will go through real fast. So if you don't want to know what our 10 through 6 was, go back and listen to last week's bump, because I'm going to go through and give a little fresh reminder to everybody joining us again. So Gable so far, number 10, Advance Wars Reboot Camp. Number 9, AEW Fight Forever. Number 8, Pokemon Scarlet Violet DLC, Teal Mask, and Indigo Disc. Number 7, F-Zero 99. Number 6, Resident Evil 4. Mine, 10 through 6 so far. Number 10, Cocoon. Number 9, Dead Space. Number 8, Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Number 7, Alan Wake 2. And number 6, Spider-Man 2. So that is our 10 through 6 so far. So we're going to do kind of the idea right now is we're going to do 5, then 4. Gables and I, we don't know our list. It's all surprises to us. We're going to do 5, 4. And then before we do 3, we'll do honorable mentions. And then we'll do 3, 2, 1. So that's kind of how we always do it. And, so we're going to do it again this year. So Gables and I, we've been doing this since 2013. So it's pretty fun doing this every year. So Gables, sticking with tradition, buddy, I'm going to have you go with number 5.
All right, so Super Mario RPG, the remake of that, is my number 5 game of the year.
I lost my pen.
But, yeah, man, this game, I thought, was better than the original in terms of not only the different type of looks, the different type of styles and stuff, but also the way that it fixed certain problems that the original game had and made it even better. Like, for example, the thing about frog coins in the original game, you could not get a very lot of, because there were some times you would try to go forth and try to beat some enemies, but it would take a hell of a long time in order just to acquire a couple, especially if you wanted to get a few items from like the merchants over by that little frog, like tadpole pond, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have the random chance with when you're facing off like in turn-based battles and stuff to encounter stronger enemies that will drop frog coins and stuff. It's like a random type of thing, so sometimes you may come across like a stronger opponent than normal. That way you can earn frog coins that way. I thought that it definitely made the experience a lot more interesting because you never knew exactly when you were going to get that certain type of added bonus to the stuff. Granted, this is a game that I've been playing over and over again and stuff for the past, like, 20-some-odd years or plus. And, of course, you know, Super Mario RPG I'm fairly familiar with in terms of playing it through the Super Nintendo, the Virtual Console, and all that other stuff. But I love the changes they did to it. I love the graphical rehaul in terms of how it looks. Going back to playing as characters, so like with Geno, with Mallow, with friggin', like, Bowser and stuff, and finding some of the best weapons, the best, like, set of weapons you can for each character was really fun. Going through the set, like, scenarios and stuff, like, oh, okay, we're gonna be fighting off against the Smithy gang and stuff. Like, the different types of boss battles, you know, the one with Yardovic, and then the one with, like, Spiritovich, or something like that, where basically, that boss is, it's just like shooting arrows or something like that, and it's hitting the toads inside the random town and stuff, and just freezing them in place, and so you have to try to go through, like, the forest and stuff in order to navigate the maze and stuff in order to get to him and then try to beat him and doing that type of, do that type of stuff alongside Geno and stuff. But yeah, just a revisiting of a classic game that I felt like was done better than, like, the original release. I love the fact that you could actually cycle through the original musical soundtrack alongside the remastered. I never once actually went through like the classic ones and stuff, only because I've listened to that soundtrack so many different times throughout the years that seeing the remastered ones was pretty fun. Absolutely pretty fun. The gameplay experience of itself was generally easy, but there were parts that did kind of spike up, especially towards like the beginning parts of the game. I felt that were kind of a little bit like more difficult because I was trying to remember different portions of the game, like how, like, I did play it, you know, and then trying to figure out certain aspects of some things that had changed, but try to do, like, a work around it and stuff in some aspects. But mostly it's mostly just, like, the same Super Mario RPG that I grew up and played all that time ago, only that there's new bells and whistles. There's definitely some added fixes because, games back in the day didn't have, like, downloads of, like, updates or whatever the hell. But that entire playthrough felt fun. It felt new. It felt like something that I had yet to, you know, like, adventure fully and stuff. And so with that, I felt like that this was the number 5 game of the year for me.
All right. Well, very cool, Gables. I totally forgot you played that game. I laughed to myself when I wrote it down, Gables. I wrote down Mario RGP, and I'm just going to leave it. it's almost 2 in the morning. I got a fever. I don't have any cowbell. My voice is slowly fading more and more. It's just going to go there forever in my notebook. But Gables, man, this is where it really started to hurt, Gables. I started making some tough calls. Throughout the whole list, you're making tough calls, but man,
yes,
man, I have very little, if any, complaints about the rest of these games here for my top 5. Top, I don't even want to. Okay, number 5, Gables. It hurts to even say. Star Wars Jedi Survivor. God damn it! I can't believe it, Gables. Like, I really was, like, so disappointed in Fallen Order. I thought it was still a good game. I thought it was, like, a solid, like, 7.5. That. Right. I played the game at launch. It was buggy and broken. I went back and I played it earlier this year. Still thought it was, like, a solid, like, you know, 7.5 game. Even, you know, all these finally fixed and everything running, frame rate's fine, all that. No falling through worlds and shit. I thought the combat was just okay. I thought the different areas you go to kind of, it was just the generic, hey, here's the jungle level. Here's the level on the lava planet. Here's the ice level. It was just like every generic thing we've ever seen from every Star Wars thing ever. And it's like, I've been telling myself, Gables, for years that I just don't love Star Wars anymore. I don't care about Star Wars anymore. It doesn't bother me anymore. I don't get triggered by it like I used to. And then this goddamn masterpiece comes out, Jedi Survivor. And I'm like, God damn it. I just want to hate you, and you do this game does everything to make me love them again, Gables, and it hurts so bad because I just don't want to care anymore about them. It's just like a breakup where it's like, I just don't want to think about you anymore. Then they just keep pop back up, and that's what Star Wars is to me. But anyways, I always thought the first game they nailed. I thought the characters and the story with Cal Kestis, his story of being a Jedi that was like, you know, he let survive Order 66. It takes place between 3 and 4. And then like, you know, like him, like getting back the powers, like throughout the game of the Force, then meeting characters along the way, like Greasy Money, my boy Greasy. And then Morin, I believe her name is, and like, your Jedi Master, all of them. Like they nailed that. And it was just like, we just got to make everything else around it better. And they built upon this game in more ways than one, where every ability that you got by the end of the first game, you just start off with this. What sucked was some of the best things, like the double jump and be able to like climb like faster, and like wall run were like things, like some of the best parts of that game were like added in the second half. And it's like, if this was here from the beginning, I would have loved this game way, way more. You just start off with a lot of shit and they just build and add upon it. Like, get like the hook shot. They like just getting around, like they give you new abilities and shit that you can do, that just make it so much fun to like, actually now I want to explore and I want to do these things. Getting the gang back together. So it's 5 years later, and it's like, it's kind of like Mass Effect 2, where it's like, it's 5 years later, Cal is off doing his own thing, still trying to take down the Empire. But he's got a different team, but the original team is like broken up, and it's getting them all back together. Like in Mass Effect 2, getting the gang back together for this big mission. But also it's like, you're adding new characters on the way, but it's also like just finding out about like what have they been doing in the last 5 years, like learning more about them. And then the idea of like Cal dealing with like trying to be this perfect Jedi in a world where like Jedis essentially don't exist anymore. And it's like the Jedi way basically is what also led to the downfall of the Jedi in like the original prequel trilogy and all that. And honestly, a better way than what the prequels ever did, in a lot of ways. But like, yeah, I just loved him dealing with that and like, you know, dealing with like is like, you can't feel love. You're not supposed to attach with the people, friends, all that. Like, it's just like him dealing with all these and like also dealing with like going to the dark side throughout the entire game. Like, I love that. Some of the moments in this game are fucking awesome. I enjoy the like all the worlds are so much better. Like, they're actually like feel like real environments. Like you go on like all the planets you go on to, like they're not just like I said, the jungle planet, the ice planet, the volcano planet. Like, there's like a whole planet that's like a spaceship in the sky. There's a whole like another planet that's like in a swamp like area, but like all this other shit's right, like sinking into the swamp. And then like there's like also on top of it, there's like a whole village. And like these, like each world is fucking huge and massive. Like, I'm not saying it's like Far Cry massive, but like there's so much stuff in it where like then you find like there's caves and whole other, like then you can actually like, oh, like Ron, you like realize there's levels to the shit, like literal levels to the shit. Like as you like are able to explore and unlock new abilities, just going around, like I said, I want to explore, I wanted to find more things. The bounties, the bounty hunters, and having those fights were fucking awesome. I love those. Just completely blown away by Jedi Survivor. I can't wait. I hope we get a third one. It sounds like we're getting a third one. The way they end it, spoiler, sounds like we're getting a third one. But man, it's like in a world where like we're not getting Uncharted games anymore, I really feel like Respawn has taken the Uncharted mantle with a set of Star Wars Jedi series. So man, I fucking, yeah, adore this game. 10 out of 10. Gables, what's your number four, buddy?
All right, so number four is going to be Metroid Prime Remastered.
Okay.
Oh, man. Let me tell you something. I did love playing the original Metroid Prime way back when. When Nintendo did that stealth drop and announced that announcement of stealth drop this past year for Metroid Prime Remastered and stuff. You know, I already loved the game, but after experiencing like the different control style from what you could do in comparison to the original, you had this tank control sort of like option to where you'd hold down like the R button, like say on a GameCube controller like this, and then you just have to like just hold down the R button and then just try to manually go through and do the analog stick, do everything. it was before twin stick shooting and stuff like that was standardized for console games, for shooters and stuff like that. But what I do love about this game, though, is just like the different types of control styles you can do. You could potentially just do with the original style, or you could do like how you do with modern first-person shooters, or you could do with Joy-Cons and stuff like you would on the Wii, like, trilogy and stuff that was available for, like, on the Wii and stuff like that for all those, all that time ago. But you had different types of options. The game in and of itself was remastered, like, remade to where it felt like a remake to it. The graphics were overhauled a bit for it. I mean, the whole aspects of, like, the different lockables were kind of different in that regards. But the original Metroid Prime, fantastic game. It's absolutely one of the best games to play on the GameCube. But the reason why it's number four on my Game of the Year list is because there was enough changes, I felt like, to where this feels like an entirely different experience now. Because things became easier to kind of process. Things became sort of better in terms of the quality of how I was controlling Samus in terms of exploring different durations. Actually wanting to go back and getting all those different missile tank expansions, all the different like energy tank things, because that's exactly what I did. I went through and I found every single missile, every single like expansions, every single like energy thing, like energy like stuff. And I went through Metroid Prime and did something that I'd never done, and that's completely beat this game without the need of any type of action replay or Game Shark or anything of that sort. But the battles against Meta Ridley, the battles against, like, the Omega Pirate and stuff, and also against, like the whole Metroid Prime stuff, the shifting final battle and stuff, to where you have to, like, literally switch between different types of visors from, like, the X-ray, the thermal visors and stuff, and then try to do some scanning, try to make sure you can scan the boss and make sure what you're hitting is actually what you're hitting, and not just trying to guess all this other shit and stuff. Fantastic action game. It is a fantastic first person shooter, even though it's kind of hilarious back in the day they tried calling it a first person adventure. But
that sounds like Nintendo.
That was fucking let's just say that hardcore Nintendo fans back in the day, that was their excuse for not calling it a first person shooter, but just calling it something else other than a first person shooter. But yeah, this is one of the best first-person shooters that I felt like has ever been released. Not just on Nintendo consoles, just in general. But, dude, people owe it upon themselves to try out this remake of the original Metroid Prime. Because this is what happens when you have a studio like Retro Studios at the helm. They entirely created this game, like, from scratch and stuff because of, like, the whole aspect of the Metroid franchise. After the success of, like, Super Metroid, what's going to be their take in terms of, like, the original Metroid? Or, yeah, a continuation of it. And this is what they came up with, and it's still a fantastic experience from beginning to end all these years later. It's now more modernized. It's definitely better in terms of its original. And that's just the theme that's been going on this year. Since there's been so many great games, there's been, I would think, a lot of great remastered, if not great, like remakes that have come out this year that kind of blow their originals like out of the water, like, say, with Dead Space, Resident Evil 4, Super Mario RPG is the one I was just talking about, but Metroid Prime is definitely on that example, too, to where this is one of those type of games where, if you're a gamer, if you have a Switch, get this game. It is freaking phenomenal. But yeah, that is my number four.
All right. Well, my number four, Gables.
Yeah.
It's Resident Evil 4.
Hey.
Yeah. God damn it, man. I hate this list. I fucking hate doing games. Why do I enjoy doing this? It just hurts so bad. I just hurt myself. I love that, man. Like, if you've been listening to the show long enough, Resident Evil 4 is one of my favorite games of all time. The original game was. I've told the story a million times about it was the first game I ever bought with my own money when I was, 2005 when that game came out, Gables? So I would have been I wasn't. I think it was like January. It was right after Christmas. So I remember. So I wasn't even quite 16 years old yet, and like have like got Christmas money, and like having to hold the money as like a kid with no money for 2 weeks to then buy this game, and then like you know, back then it was like a game, say it came out like January 10th. Didn't mean it was gonna be in the store on January 10th. It was gonna could be sometimes it's the 9th, sometimes it's the 11th, sometimes it's the 12th. You never know. And I remember my dad, like when I was at school, like calling for me, like he, I remember him just being off because in the winter he didn't get to work a lot because he's a truck driver, and like him calling GameStop every day and asking for Residential Evil. him like
Residential
but,
Evil.
Yeah, but like I had just enough money to get the actual game, and I remember it finally came out and coming home, because like he called multiple days in a row for me. You know, even after it was supposed to come out, and finally got it for me, and then he surprised me with the guidebook. He bought me the guidebook and everything like that. And I have like a little 8-1. I have like the steel bookcase. I still have it at my parents' house. I couldn't find it. I tried to find it again recently, and I couldn't find it. It has like a little Ada Wong, like little tiny figure that was in the case. Like it's still in the packaging and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, like play. Like I've talked about, like you know, back then, especially you know, like it's not like you know, growing up, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So like having a game that wasn't coming for your birthday or Christmas was a big deal, or like money you saved from doing like you know mowing the lawn and shit. But like, so back then, you know, like just play the, you know, like a lot of kids like our age or older, like you just play the same game over and over again. And like, I've talked about like this and Metal Gear Solid 1 are like the most played through games ever for me. Where like I've told the story, like I said, I've told the story a million times about this game where I played the game so many times that I maxed out everything, every other weapon in the game. And I got to the point where it was like $1 million in-game dollars for the infinite rocket launcher. And I played the game through enough times that I finally like had enough money to buy it. And I played the game one more time through with only using the infinite rocket launcher. and I remember like one-shotting every boss, one-shotting like the killing everybody in the village. And like that was like the last, and that was the last time I ever played through the game, was after that. And I just, yeah, it's, and I'm like, I've always talked about like, I'm not like this person, like don't touch the story. This stuff has to be in here. Like, I'm not like that. But I am precious to this. Like, I don't want like, I just don't fuck it up. Like, and I had faith in Capcom that like they have proven time and time again that like I'm not like I wasn't a huge like really like 4 was the first Resident Evil game I really got into. I really didn't get into another one again until like I liked 5. 6 was awful. It wasn't really until 8 that I got into it really hardcore again. Well, I guess remakes. I really liked the 2 and 3. But anyways, I'm rambling. But like I don't ruin this for me, you know, like there's a lot of childhood in this game to me. Like, just don't fuck it up. And they didn't fuck it up, Gables. They actually made it better. They made like, they didn't ruin the OG, and then but they also made it so much fucking better. And just like what they did to this, like they totally, like they added so much content to it. Like Louise was like a great character that's memorable. And at the very memorable scene with like fighting, like defending the house. But like that was really the only moment you don't have a lot of moments with him in the original game. And then like building upon him, this whole part in like the minecart and like underground and stuff in the caves and all that, like adding so much more to his character. They even cut out like a whole boss fight from the original game, but it's like doesn't really matter in the end. But like they did such a great job of like some of the moments, like the village fight, obviously. One of the greatest moments in video game history was that opening village fight. And like, it's just as good, if not better than it was before. Like you set the bowl on fire and like run through and take out a bunch of, the zombies for you. like I said, defending the house is as epic as like you remember it being, like all the boss fights, like with Krauser was like, I was like, how is that going to work with like Krauser? Like back then QT was all the rage. And it's like, man, if I see QT nowadays, I'm going to fucking rage. And now it's like, they had Del Lago, obviously on the boat, like, man, they built that up so much more in this game. Like, but also like, just like how much they added to like the world itself, like adding like the side missions you can do in the game were fun. Like obviously bringing back the merchant was important as well. Loved him. But getting like this, having the cheese their game. Like, we always talk about, like, there's that 80s cheese that just can never be matched again. Right. No matter what you do, it'll just never be the same. And there's, like, something about, like, 90s and early 2000s cheese in video games, especially in the early days of voice acting, that so hard to hit. And I don't think it's done well sometimes, but yes, very rarely. And this game does a great job of balancing the more seriousness of the new Resident Evil, but, like, also, like, you know, we're past the days of the Jill sandwich and where's Barry? We're past those days, but they did such a great job of, like, incorporating, like, with, like, Leon, when he gets on with the village fight, he's like, where'd everybody go? Bingo. And, like, they do such a great, like, of balancing all of the dumb shit that we loved about RE4. Like, they're aware of it and they go with it. And, like, that's great. Sometimes, like, companies get a little too precious with it, and, like, they thought that ruled 20 years ago. But, like, really, no, we're laughing at it, but, like, we're laughing at it, like, and, like, oh, no, we're laughing at it too, but we're laughing at it with you, and that's awesome. It's like, they're not mad that we're laughing at it type of thing, and they went with it, and it's so great. Like I said, like, the adding more with Louise, Ashley being an actual, like, good character this time instead of just, like, the damsel in distress, is really good. The whole section with her in the castle where you had to play as her, legitimately fucking terrifying and, like, really good. The combat, obviously, they fucking nailed it. I imagine when people played Final Fantasy VII Remake, the huge Final Fantasy VII dorks out there that played Remake probably marked out, like, the way they marked out for Remake is the way I'm probably marked out for Resident Evil 4 Remake. I love that. I love this game. Fuck, man. Like, if you haven't played this game, like, even if you don't have that love for RE4 like we did, or, like, especially me, it's just a great game. Just fucking play the goddamn game. But yeah, that is my number four. Gables, let's get into some of our honorable mentions, buddy. What do you got for me?
Okay, so for honorable mentions, Gravity Circuit. This is a game that I played on the PS5 and stuff during, like, Extra Life and stuff. It's more akin to, like, a, like, homage to, say, like, the Mega Man X and stuff. You control, like, a little robot and stuff. You basically are trying to rescue this city, but you have to defeat these derelict robots and stuff and inherit their powers and do all this stuff. The gameplay was fine. A lot of the aspects of the game itself, you know, was, like, kind of more traditional in terms of some platformer styles and stuff, but it had some fun gimmicks. There were some boss battles that were fun. There was one robot that had, like, a lot of, like, music elements to her stage. So trying to navigate around here and try to navigate, like, the hard sections of the stage and stuff without dying and stuff was interesting. But, okay, so other than that, though, there definitely is a couple other honorable mentions and stuff of games that I had played this year. Obviously, playing Cocoon and stuff on Game Pass, that was a pretty fun experience, too. For the short time I did have a chance to play it and stuff, I mean, the puzzles, like you were saying before in the last episode and stuff like that, they're pretty cool. The aspects of, like, taking one world into the other world, into another world and stuff, that was actually pretty much mind-blowing. Because all these mechanics are not explained to you. You had to go through and, like, do all this other type of, like, figuring things out in order to make things work as you go. Let's see. Trying to think of other types. I think I'll do, like, one more honorable mention. This may not be an honorable mention, but it's going to be a dishonorable mention.
Oh, Jesus.
This is going to be a dishonorable mention. And I'm talking about Destiny 2.
I knew it was coming. I knew it. As soon as you said dishonorable. Yeah.
Dude. For as much fun as we had this year playing through certain games and stuff, there were certain aspects of games that were disappointing, and there were full-on games that were absolutely terrible, like Kong and Gollum and stuff like that, Redfall and stuff. Playing through Destiny 2 Lightfall, a game that had a lot of hype surrounding it because it was supposed to be, like, one of the final, like, DLCs in terms of this specific story arc or something for Destiny 2. And then pretty much given a side story with terrible characters, with hardly anything interesting in terms of, a post-expansion sort of, like, content to it, and then expecting you to not only had spent close to $50 or almost $100 for some people in order for this expansion, in order to get the full-on just, because this is how Bungie does, you pay for the expansion as well as, like, 3 or 5 different seasons and stuff, and that's how they justify this $100 price tag. the core experience of it was basically a gigantic tutorial level for the ability Strand. And let me tell you something. Strand was definitely fun to use. Not going to lie about that. But this expansion was so polarizing to me. I played the least amount of Destiny 2. And it's, you know, the least amount of Destiny 2 that I've had over the past, like, 5 years. I only played it for about 16 hours, right? And that was basically going through the expansion, played a couple different maps with my friends and stuff, and I was burnt out. I was just like, no, I'm not going back to this. But barring what the final shape does for the next year and stuff, and especially with all of Bungie's, like, woes and stuff, like a potential maybe Sony takeover, if they are not performing as well as they should, you know, it's going to be a pivotal year coming up here for not just Bungie as a studio, but like for Destiny 2 as a game as well. And I'll tell you what, they would not be really much in this position if they had actually if their higher-ups actually let the developers go with the initial fixes that players were requesting and not just subtly just a bait and switch in terms of a DLC content, expansion content like Lightfall. But yeah, that's two honorable mentions, one dishonorable mention. All right, Tyler, what were your honorable mentions?
All right, my honorable mentions, so there's 10 games here. I didn't rank them though. Usually I'll rank them. I didn't rank them this year. I'm going to go through them pretty fast though. First up here, Horizon Burning Shores. It's the DLC for Horizon Forbidden West. I can't believe, like, I remember being nervous. This game was only $20 for the expansion. I'm like, that seemed like a lot. Like, Sony's not shy about charging money for some of their shit. But like the fact that like this came out, it's like actually like I'm stunned they didn't like build this as like an expand alone. Like, they could have probably put this on the store shelf for like $30-$40 and like, there's enough content here. There's a whole section of a map here. There's like legitimately like, if you wanted to, like, you know, 10, 15 hours of good content there, like a whole nother area, like actual meaningful story content. And it doesn't feel just like they just plucked a part out of the main game and like, hey, we're going to make this content you have to pay for. Like, it's actually, it takes place after the main game builds upon. And there are things that happens in this that will affect the third game. This is, and obviously Lance Reddick passing away, sadly, aside.
Yeah.
Like, I was blown away by how much content was here. And like, honestly, probably the best boss fight was in like the history of Horizon was the last fight, the last boss in the Burning Shores DLC. So yeah, big time recommend if you're a fan of Horizon like me. Next up here, Ravenlock. This was a game that was on Game Pass. It was like just a cute little charming, indie game on there that's like kind of like a Alice in Wonderland type game. Like, it's very simplistic, you know, it's an action adventure game, but it's like but yeah, like I said, it's very like simplistic, very cozy, like there's a good story, good characters in here. Like, you're just you know, there's the boss fights are fun, but it's not overly challenging. I got all 1,000 achievement points in this in like 3 hours and 100% of it, and like I just had a good time with it. It was a nice I talked about like with Wolong on the last podcast about sometimes it's just about time and place, and this kind of came out at a perfect time, and it was like right in between Star Wars and Zelda, whereas like this came out and I beat it in like a day. I actually beat it I played it all on my birthday. And it was just like that nice little thing that hit at the right time, and it was just that nice little palate cleanser that I needed getting in, going from one big game and right into another. So next up here, another game that kind of hit right in the middle of two big games, Planet of Lana. I talk about like play dead games like Limbo and Inside and stuff like that. I love those style of games and I wish there was more of them. But it's like, I played a lot of them, of like ones that are like them, and they're fine to mediocre. This is the first one I played where I'm like, this is on the level of what they do from the visual style, the way the puzzles and everything like that. Like, I was blown away by everything, the music, everything about this game. If you're someone that likes Limbo or Inside, like, this is like a must play right here. It's on Game Pass. Check it the fuck out. Next up here, AEW Fight Forever. You know, I'm a huge AEW fan. I'm also a big fan of those old school arcadey wrestling games. I've just been wanting those since I don't know, mid-2000s, maybe longer. And finally, like, yeah, like you mentioned it, Gables, when you talked about it for your, like it was the year number nine, is there was like they did such a good job. Like they got like 80% of the way there. It's just like, man, I hope we get a sequel out of them, because it would be awesome to like see, like, cause I feel like the gameplay is there. They just need to like, it's just a lot of, the main issue is just content and the game being a little dated, but otherwise like, The game is there. They just need more content. Was like the big thing at the end of the day. Next up here, Oxenfree 2. Huge fan of Oxenfree. I've been, one of those things I've also, since day one, pounding the table for Oxenfree. I remember pounding it, and like, I think you and Justin both bought it like years ago on the Switch and played it. I remember Justin loved it. I absolutely adore this game. It's also made by, it's like people that worked on like Telltale's Walking Dead, broke off, made their own studio, and this is that. So yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. Please play that. Another game that is beautiful, and if you want to cry, but also want to beat a game in 90 minutes, Venba. Just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game about dealing with being a different culture in Canada. It's based off, actually, I believe it's based off kind of like a true story of like one of the people like creating the game, but like growing up, like cultures clashing between this family that grew up in, like, you know, I believe they're from India, and like dealing with, you know, trying to like instill their cultures and their beliefs into their son, but because they grew up in India, and then him growing up as moving when he's a baby to Canada, dealing with like, you know, being like an awkward teenager that's kind of embarrassed by his parents and their cultures, and also but like wanting to be just like kind of a normal boy to him and his friends, and like growing with that, and like the style clashes. But also like bringing things together with cooking, and like doing like the cooking is fun. Like I enjoy, like, it's kind of like a little, like, not barely a puzzle, but it's just like you're cooking these, and they're real, like real recipes that you're cooking in this game. But like telling a story via, you know, the cooking and the power of cooking, and, just, yeah, beautiful. Goddamn God. Oh my God. I cried so many goddamn times in this game. It is absolutely one of the most heart-wrenching stories out there, and you can beat it in 90 minutes. It's on Game Pass as well. A lot of these games actually are on Game Pass here that I'm talking about. Another game here, Telltale's The Expanse. I've been a huge Telltale fanboy for a very long time. I've beaten everything they've done post from Walking Dead on, except for the Minecraft one. That's the one I haven't done. And obviously, I was devastated when they got closed. But it's kind of, the writing was on the wall for a while there, but to see them come back, it's a lot of different, it's some of the old people, but it's a lot of new people. But jumping into like The Expanse, something I never read the books, didn't really care for the TV show. I actually went back and I watched a good chunk of the show earlier this year. I need to get back into that. Football season started and it just kind of blew that up for me. Ended up like absolutely like really, really like love like getting back. And this also Deck Nine helped work on this too, which they make the Life of Strange games, which also I love. So I just love where this went. Like, this, man, this is like, it's a new engine. It came out, it worked just fine. Every episode came out every 2 weeks. I kind of wish they got rid of the episodic thing, but like, hey, like it came out on a consistent basis, and it wasn't like 6 months, like 3 months of like, hey, where the fuck's the next episode? Or like, sometimes you might get the episode in a month, sometimes it's 3 months, but like, and then it might come out and you might just lose all your save content, or hey, it's broken and buggy, but like it came out and it was just worked and it was great. I had a really good time with it, especially for an IP I don't care about at all. Next up here, Super Mario Wonder. I've talked about, I'm not a huge 2D Mario guy, and this like blew me away. This was just a game of moments. Like every level was like so different. Like literally, like just like every level just being like something crazy is gonna happen, and I loved it. And I was there for it. My only like real complaint is like I kind of wish that like Mario, like the Mario games are so great on like game mechanics. And like giving you a bunch of different game mechanics, but also like letting you do so much more with them. And that was one thing I wish that this game didn't really have, was like, because literally every level was just something different happened, and I loved it. But like there was some I loved so much, I wanted more of that. Like I would love a whole world where you just play as a fucking Goomba, you know? Like let's get weird with it, you know? Excuse me, sorry. But yeah, I for somebody that doesn't care about 2D Mario games, I love that game. RoboCop, Rogue City, man, just one of just like the dumbest fun games I played this year. You know, it's like that last year, like I had Final Fantasy Strangers of Paradise. This year I had RoboCop Rogue City, where it's like, this game is absolutely moronic. We talked about earlier about finding an 80 cheese and this game found it, you know, and in a perfect, like, it's a perfect 2000s cheese video game and an 80s cheese IP movie IP, and they nailed it. It's great. My only complaint really was, like, I had a great time. This game could have been, like, had a real good shot at, like, being on my top 10 list, but, like, I just kind of, like, I didn't really need, like, an open area RoboCop. Kind of wish it was just, like, more of, like, a, instead of being, like, a 15, 20-hour game, it could have just been, like, a solid, like, 6-7-hour game. Would have been a lot better. Next up here, Starfield. I have, I put, this was the third most played game of the year. Yeah, sorry. Not including Madden this year. I said Wulong earlier. This Wulong was fourth. This was third. I put like 57 hours in this game. I had such a great time with it. As someone that does I've talked about it a lot here. Like, I enjoyed, I really like Fallout 3, and I haven't really cared for Bethesda games since. And I was like excited for this game. I put like a ton of hours in this game. I really, really, really like this game. I love this game. I love some of the characters in the game. I just enjoyed going to these different towns and like exploring and like getting into like these, some of the best parts of this game was like just getting into like just doing all the side missions, joining leagues, joining, like becoming a sheriff and like, or going undercover and all shit. Like all the, like where these storylines played out and how they affected the world itself was awesome. The biggest, the thing that breaks this game for me is like, I spent so much time in loading screens or like, just like, or walking to like, because it's like 400 years in the future, but you have to, the only way you can communicate with people is face to face. It's like, man, so I have to like jump multiple fucking star systems to like, I have to go to my ship, jump multiple star systems, go through another loading screen, then walk to this person through multiple different areas, like walk through this whole fucking area to then go talk to this person, to then walk back to my ship, jump through multiple star systems, to then walk to back to this area. It's like, why? Like, so like, man, just like, respect my fucking time. Like, I could have done all the shit I did that I loved and probably a dozen hours less if I could just fucking Skype somebody in the 24th century. And then last but not least here, God of War Ragnarok Valhalla. It's the most recent thing on my list. Man, I really wanted to put it like on my list, but I was like, it's great. There's just so many other new shit that came out this year. That's like a brand new game, a brand new thing. I couldn't do it. I couldn't justify it. But man, I was blown away. I can't believe, once again, how is this fucking free? I don't understand it. Like, this is so goddamn good. I cannot believe how the budget, the content, like how much the story that is there that makes a difference to this fucking God of War lore is so goddamn good. I can't believe what they put in a roguelike, and like someone that does not like roguelikes, you know, speaking of respecting time, roguelikes, I could not put it down. I beat it in like two sittings in one day. I fucking adore that goddamn, like, it's like almost like a whole different game itself. I can't believe like it was free. I would have paid $20 for it and I've been totally happy with it. But that is my honorable mentions. Gables, let's get into it again here. What is your number three?
All right. So number three is The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
All right. Okay.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What the fuck is number two and three?
You mean two and one?
Yeah, that's how numbers work. Yep. Gables, I'm quit making fun of me. Quit making fun of me. I'm sick, okay?
I understand. But
jerk.
Dude. Man, Tears of the Kingdom. Tears of the Kingdom is a fucking excellent game, dude. Just the way you're able to go through and solve different puzzles in terms of like with the little friggin' dungeons and stuff like that, using the Ultra Hand things to craft almost any freaking thing you pretty much desire, just to go forth and try to solve tasks. Making hovercrafts, making damn vehicles, making friggin' like just crazy ass shit and stuff, and then just exploring everything and stuff. I mean, granted, you know, it's like a lot of the stuff that you're doing is kind of like mostly the same of what you would have done in like a Breath of the Wild, but yet I did like a lot of what I did have a chance to play of this game. I mean, I spent a good solid, like close to about 30 hours playing Tears of the Kingdom. Definitely not a lot in terms of like how most people had experienced that game. Obviously, I'm like 100 plus hours here and there and stuff. But yeah, for the experience I did have a chance to go forth and enjoy. It's like, this game is absolutely phenomenal. The gameplay is still great. Exploring the dungeons, doing all the different tasks and stuff, meeting the characters and stuff. The freaking boss battles in this game could be freaking epic. I mean, hell, earlier on this year, we were talking about how you were going through, like, the first initial boss dungeon and stuff like that, and you had, like, an entirely different experience fighting this boss than I did, right? To where I was basically using, like, the barrels and stuff trying to replenish magic and stuff, and I was actually going into the sky and stuff and just trying to shoot the monster from there, and then I just basically used, like, a more kind of aggressive sort of approach where you used more, like, a methodical sort of a...
I would say mine's more aggressive by literally diving through the enemy.
Yeah, you were diving through the enemy, and here I am, like, I literally just went through, just wrote the things and start shooting things at the enemy so I could do that, running out of magic, having epic moments like that. And that's just the thing, though. You were touching upon, like, a game earlier and stuff that was just, like, from moment to moment and stuff. This is definitely one of those games where it does have those good set-piece moments to where, on one hand, you're riding across, like, the landscape, right? And you come across a group of, like, Bokoblin and stuff that have their various tribes, and they're having all these different types of stuff. You can go forth, you have the option, you can go forth and raid them to get all sorts of their stuff, or you can go and, like, just do something entirely different, like, say, battling the, like, this giant, like, moblin-like creature, out of the Hokoblin or something like that it's called. And it's, like, this big old fat, enemy and stuff, to where if you do beat him, he gives out some, like, good loot. And you can use that to go and, like, craft different types of weapons. And you know what? Even though that these weapons do break, the ones you go and, like, do and stuff, I love the idea of fusing certain weapons together and try to create what other types of stuff you can get into. Like, you say you can create your own, like, beam weapons and stuff with, like, freaking rocks and, like, all this other shit. But I will say, though, it's, like, from uncovering certain bits of the lore, uncovering certain bits of the stuff, I mean, this game is definitely more of Breath of the Wild in some aspects, and even more. There's definitely a lot more options, a lot more things that are better than core aspects of, like, Breath of the Wild and stuff. But, man, this game definitely did a great job in terms of being a fantastic Zelda game. So, with that, I feel like from the experience that I did have with it, there are a couple other games I did have a lot more fun with. And it's hard for me to admit that, but at the same time, as much as I love playing Legend of Zelda games and stuff, and how strong this year was with game releases, there were two other games that brought my interest and, like, legitimately had me going through and enjoying every single bit of this game, even more so than Tears of the Kingdom. Which is fucking crazy to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's my number three.
All right. Well, my number three is a game that I played more than any other game this year. Not named Madden. God damn it. Final Fantasy 16. I absolutely... God damn this goddamn game. What a fucking video game, Gables. When people ask what a video game is, just I'm going to just shove fucking Final Fantasy 16 in their fucking face. This is a fucking video game right here. This is a video game ass video game. This game fucking rules. This game is the hypest fucking shit I've ever played in my entire life. I love this goddamn game. Where do I begin? I am someone that never been a huge Final Fantasy fan. To really 7, kind of like Final 7 remake, jumped into it, and I've since then I've played now 16 and Strangers of Paradise last year. I'm not a huge high fantasy person. Like, that doesn't really click for me. Like, there are obviously exceptions to the rules, you know, like Dragon Age, Lord of the Rings, the movies, stuff like that, like Game of Thrones. But it's like, definitely, speaking of Game of Thrones, they said that they were inspired by Game of Thrones. I could fucking tell. But there was so much there's so much shit I loved about this game. I have a lot of problems with this game, but there's so much I loved about it. Like, I love, like, this whole world, this whole idea is so cool to me of, like, there's the magic in the world of, like, hey, people that use magic were normally in, like, you know, other games, like, they're kind of looked at as, like, you know, evil sorcerers, or they're looked at as, like, kind of better than most people, the common people. And it's, like, if you are someone that uses magic, like, or he has magic abilities, like, you have a tattoo on your face called branded, and you're, like, basically, like, less than, you're fucking scum, you're basically slaves, you're the front line in an army, in, like, of our armies, you know. And this idea of, like, every like kingdom, like the base of the, like the royal person there is like a descendant of an icon, and they have the ability to turn into like these icons. And I love this whole story, this whole world they built up. And I like, it sucked that like about 2/3, like there's this other, there's like this brewing bigger thing going on in the behind the scenes, and about 2/3 of the way through it becomes that thing. And it's like, I would love a whole game. If they redid Final Fantasy 16 and took away like the whole, like the story with Ultima, and just made it about the battles going on within these kingdoms with these people and this world of branded, like, cause they'd spend a lot of time with it. And I love that shit. That was the best part of this game. And it's like, that was the only thing. That was my one major complaint. I was like, of like that story was like, man, there's so much more you can hear, especially in Jill. They could have done a better job with Jill, but that's a story for another day. But, the people you join along the way, like, you have like your sweet baby boy, Torgel, a little puppy dog. I love that little fucker so much. You have like your brother, Joshua, Jill, like other characters you meet along the way. I don't want to spoil too much more about people, about stuff that goes on in this game, but, I just blown away by like some of the characters. The voice acting is peak voice acting in video games. Here, I just love them. Ben Starr as Clive, open up my heart, my mind, and my butthole for him. I love this guy so much. I love what he did with Clive. Man, what a fucking banger ass job for voice acting this year. I didn't play Baldur's Gate 3, to be fair, but the combat is phenomenal. The sound, the music, oh my god, the music, Gables, in this is amazing. The way like it crescendos at the perfect time, like everything in this game, like you can have complaints and some small issues with like stuff throughout the game, but everything builds, and everything is the most important parts about this game is the boss fights. And every fucking boss fight is completely different from the last, of just how they build and where they go. And there's phases, and they're long as hell, and they're epic, and they do not disappoint, and they look and they feel expensive as fucking hell. I'm like, how do games look this fucking good? It doesn't feel legal that games look and sound and are just play this well. Like the fight with the battle with Titan is like, turns into almost like a like 3D Sonic fight. Like I'm like, what is happening here? Like the music itself feels like a really bad, Sonic like rock song. This is totally different from anything I've ever played before. The fight with
Bahamut,
whatever. That fight, I talk about. I've talked about all year that that there's a moment in this game where I was so hyped up, I started crying because it was just the music, the visuals, what happened in the story, the story built to this moment happening with that fight with Bahamut was fucking awesome. And where it goes, literally where it goes, is what? Like, I can't believe it. It's so good. I love so much. This is so much my shit. This is everything I want in a video game, as far as like, it's just big, bombastic boss fights, great characters, a really good story that could have been fucking phenomenal with just a few tweaks here and there and just cut out the goddamn Ultima bullshit. But man, getting through the hurdle of it being a regular Final Fantasy game, and like going back to the high fantasy stuff, for that, just getting past that hurdle for me is like one thing, and just going through it and beyond it and just blowing through that. And it's like, I'm just stunned. My only complaints is just like, I didn't care for like where the main story went. And it's like, I wish we would have done a better job with some of the side stories. It just felt like sometimes some of these side stories were just like, some of the side missions were just there to pad out the time. It's like, this game was like, I did like almost, there's nearly 80, there's like over 60 story missions. There's nearly 80 side missions. There's like 32 bounties. There's a bunch of other shit too that I didn't do, but I did all the bounties. I did all the side missions. I did all the main stories, Gables. And it's like, man, like I love the bounties. I loved all the main stories. But like so many of those fucking side missions were just bullshit. I did not like, I would say like half or more were just like, just walk to this person, talk to this person, kill these five things, go walk back to that person. Cool. I killed these five. Here you go. Here's some money. Thank you. Cool. But then there's like the other ones that are just like multiple hour, totally like why isn't this main story shit? Like, this is better. Like all the characters you meet along the way, all the, like the side character, like the main side,
right.
This, the more important side characters of the game, like all their, like some of their best shit is in these side stories. And like the way they're like, and the way their stories wrap up and end are tied to these stories. And they're phenomenal and they're so good and they treat them with so much respect. But then there's like these like 50 other side missions that are just like, these suck. I don't want to do these. I don't give a fuck about your frying pan. But like, man, man, this game is so fucking good. It's so goddamn good. It sucks. It's three. Whoo boy. Yeah. What a year, Gables. 2023. Oh, what a fucking year. Anyways, number two, Gables, give it to me.
Super Mario Wonder.
Oh, what the fuck is one? What is one? I'm so confused.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah, Super Mario Wonder. Super Mario Wonder to me was one of the best 2D Mario games. And the reason why I say that is because the amount of creativity that was put inside of each level, the core gimmicks of each stage, it felt truly different than the next level that preceded it. It felt very cohesive. It was solid all the way through. The different powers, the different types of gimmicks you were going through, like, say, going over the foreground, background, in terms of, like, trying to navigate through stages and stuff. The whole freaking Wonder Flower aspect to where all this other, like, freaking crap would happen, like, say you have these like herd of like buffalo or something like that is running through and they had to ride them up to the sky and stuff in order to get to the next area and stuff and try to collect everything. Oh my gosh, like the whole battles and stuff with Bowser Jr. as he has that freaking gas or something like that that just changes him and stuff, then gets the power from that, and you have to try to do the creative, just try to like bypass like his stages and stuff. And then, oh my God, that end battle with Bowser, that final thing with Bowser and stuff. I mean, there were aspects of this game leading up to there where it's like, okay, this is fine, this is a bit easy and stuff. And then you come across some of the levels that when you go across the 4 or 5 stars or something like that, these will actually challenge you to the point to where, hey, this actually feels pretty cool to try to figure out, how the hell do I pass this stage? You know, I had a couple of those moments too. And what's really more fun about this and stuff, I didn't completely unlock everything inside of, like, Super Mario Wonder, but yet the fact that there are still even more harder levels inside that game that I still hadn't experienced it, even though I beat the core game, I got through and I collected all the different type of collectibles inside of those stages in the main worlds, and yet I'm still propelled to want to play more of it because there is other aspects. It has its own various, like, Star World, kind of like what Super Mario World had back in the day, right? And quite honestly, this is one of those times, again, to where we had a major Mario game release, a major Zelda game release, and this is almost like, say, 2017, like 2016, 2017 again.
2017.
It feels like 2017 again, to where I have the Mario game ranked higher than the Zelda game. Because Mario Odyssey was like my number one game of that year, and then Tears of the Kingdom was like, what, number three? Or something along that lines? And then here we go, we have Super Mario Wonder, one of the best 2D Mario games. It's in that conversation, in my opinion, like in the top five. But this, I felt, was better, and I had much more enjoyment out of this instead of like Tears of the Kingdom, is because this is something that introduced me to gaming as a whole, the Mario Brothers series, right? But yet, it felt so fresh. It felt like I was playing like those same Mario games from way back when, only in an entirely different coat of paint, more modernized, obviously. What really impressed me, though, is this is one of the few games where you can actually play with people, like, say, so your friends list and stuff like that on Nintendo Switch Online, and there wasn't hardly any issue with it.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense how well the online worked.
Yeah, exactly the point. I mean, there was a time where you were doing your own thing, I was doing my own thing and stuff, you were still in my world, and yet there was no hiccups, there was no drops, there was no ready like crazy stuff. It worked seamlessly without it being like any type of major issues with it. And that's just the thing, man. I mean, with the stages, with the major, like the power-ups and stuff, the whole elephant power-up where you could just go through, just get a whole bunch of water and stuff, just spray water enemies and like use your weight to solve different puzzles. And even like going to different stages and stuff where you have to find all the Wonder Seed stuff in order to collect that one. And some of the puzzles were kind of hard to try to figure out at first and stuff, which required me had to actually look up a few like solutions on YouTube just to make sure it's like, am I doing this right? But it literally gave me a good challenge from a Mario game. You know, that's the same feeling I had when I played through the original trilogy for the first time and Mario World, to where the first time you play through them, if you've never like played those type of games before, they are hard at first, but yet they're easy to understand and you can learn from your mistakes in order to progress further into it. So with that, you know, Super Mario Wonder is my number two game of the year.
Okay. And to answer your question about 2017, you had Breath of the Wild as number two and Mario Odyssey as number one. So yes.
Okay.
But Gables, speaking of my number two, it's my second most played game of the year. Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, here we go, baby. man. Woo, baby. Speaking of what a video game. What a fucking video game.
No
shit. So I'm someone that came away like I liked Breath of the Wild. I had number seven in my game of the year list that year in 2017. I did not feel the feelings that people felt at all that back then. Like, I enjoyed it. I see what people liked about it. It just didn't click for me. And to me, like, this fixed like pretty much every issue I had with Breath of the Wild, where like I felt like a lot of Breath of the Wild was like really was like people like just go find your like basically go find your fun, make your fun. And I never really found my fun so much. Like, I enjoyed like the shrines, I enjoyed like stuff like that, but like I didn't like it didn't click for me the way that like a lot of people did, like spending hundreds of hours in this thing and want to do everything. Like, just didn't, like I went and I did, I put my 45 hours into it. I got the Master Sword, I beat the Divine Beast, I beat the game, I saved Princess Zelda, I moved on. And this, like, man, they just they like, oh, you don't like degradable weapons, cool, here's Fuse. You hate climbing and running out of stamina and falling down, or hey, you're halfway up this mountain and it just starts raining now, so you're gonna fall. You know, go fuck yourself. Like, hey, here's Ascend. Gable's also my favorite moment of the year is the 3,000 times I got stuck on something and remembered I had Ascend.
That was me too.
Like, oh yeah, Ascend exists.
I can just.
But also, like, hey, here's some new abilities. Like, you can build things together. You can fuse these things. You can build these crazy fucking things. But hey, if you don't love doing that, here's auto build for you. Or hey, you fuck something up, here's recall. Boom, here. Like, they found a way to fix all of the pain points that like I thought that I had, that I felt in the first game. And then they made a bunch of other new systems and they built ways to fix the pain points for people like me that would have pain points. Yes. And I just had so much fun. Like, I talk about a bunch where like I put over 40 hours in this game before I started the main story. Like, I got the paraglider and then I just went on my way for like 35 hours after that. And just, I'm just going to wander around and just fuck around for hours on end. Like, I have a mission in mind, like the way my brain works, I need to have like a thing I'm going for. I have an end goal here. And like, I was like, all right, cool. I just walk the entire world. I'm going to get every tower. Like, cool. I walked every single one, did all of those, didn't fast travel. And then I did all those. And along the way, I found a couple of the tiers that like unlock some of the story missions or the cutscenes that explain like what happened, you know, in the long, long ago. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to just do all those. And then I walked to all those. The one thing I did do is because like I found one of the last ones, like the third or fourth one in, I found one of the last ones. So I looked up the guide to like find them in order. And that was the one thing I looked up. And I just wanted, I'm like, all right, cool. So I just walked across the map and did all of those things. And like, that was where I made my path along the way, where like, cool, I'm like, I'm wandering. Okay, I'm going here, put a little pin drop, walk to that thing. And then I might spend the thing. It might take me 20 minutes to walk to. It might take me 6 hours to get there because I'm going to fucking, there's like, oh, there's a shrine over there. Oh, what's this three headed dragon over here? I'm going to fuck. Oh fuck. Okay. That one hit killed me. That was stupid. Or like hit him with an arrow and it took out like a tenth of a percent of fucking damage off of his goddamn ridiculous fucking health bar. Are just like this, like finding this like group of people that like this banded band and like finding them along the way and like bringing them back together. And at the end, just crying because they play the theme song to Wind Waker. It was fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Just getting into fights with fucking random enemies. And like one point, like the enemies just, like they're all like they're chasing me on horseback and they run into each other and knock each other down. Just like it's like this game is just it's like I found my fun in this game, and it's just like I made my mission, and I just what happened to me along the way is what happened to me along the way, and I just had so much fucking fun in this game. And like on top of that, like the story missions in this game are great too, because like to me, like Breath of the Wild, like I think a lot of people, those stories, the Divine Beasts were probably the worst part of that game. Like they were just, I didn't think they were good. I enjoyed the some of the story stuff to it, but like I did not, the Divine Beasts were not fun to play through. The boss fights were kind of bad. But this, like I enjoyed all the boss, the Colgara boss fight is awesome when he shoots through and like they start playing. It's the first boss from Wind Waker. It's that, it's like
Goma.
Go, yeah, but
one
it's
of the first boss battles in Wind Waker,
in the volcano.
In the volcano, that, yeah, that's Goma, I think.
Okay, so you fight, but like the song they play is like a redone version of that song.
Oh wow!
In that fight, and I was like, I lost it. Like I was, my eyes were watering. I'm like, oh my god, like I love this. And like you said, like having like on the podcast talking about that boss fight and realizing we did it in different ways, and yes, you not knowing, like I'm like, wait, you shot it with arrows, and like I just dove through it. I just dove through him and broke them. And like I remember like going to my best friend Justin's brother was in a band, went to his concert, and like talking to people, like it was right after Breath of the Wild came out, and or but Tears of the Kingdom came out, and it'd been a few weeks, and just us talk, like me and a couple other people, like we all just sat there and like talked about that game for like over an hour about like all the shit we've done and like all the like different ways we did shit, and like wait, you can do this, like what, you can do that, like just like it was so great, like having those moments. And like man, it's just like, you know, talk about like I so badly wanted to have that feeling that people felt playing Breath of the Wild, and I felt it here, and like I adored it, I loved it. The fucking final, once you go to like the point of no return part and get in there, oh my god, it's so good. And then the final, the whole final boss fight section, especially the very, very, very last bit is fucking awesome. It is my favorite boss fight of the year, is that final section of, and like what happens after that boss fight. Like I just go back and I just watch that moment again on YouTube constantly, because it's just so fucking good. The music, the swell, like I am someone like, you know, like, hey, I love music. No shit. Everybody loves music, but I love in music and the way video games, the way it's designed, the way it's put in with like the way everything, it just goes together with the characters, the moment, everything that's happening and the way it's built up. Like I am a sucker for that. I am, you know, it hits me. I'm a bit of a crier. Man, that part just hits me right in the feels every single time. Just the what happens, what it leads to, and what that song means is so goddamn good. And like, man, like, oh, brilliant. I fucking, yeah. Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, one of the most polished games I've ever played, too, ever made. And it's on the fucking Switch, of all things. One of the most, like, rough-running consoles the last couple of years. And have a game this massive, when the biggest games were made on that hardware, is just it's amazing. Like that, studies need to be done on how they did it. but yeah, my number two, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. All right, Gables, this is it. I've been racking my brain trying to figure it out. It's probably gonna be something like totally obvious that I totally missed. But Gables, tell me your number one.
My number one game of 2023 is Street Fighter VI.
Oh, fuck, I'm an idiot. Wow. Wow. I totally forgot about this.
Okay. Well, what's kind of funny is that you kind of didn't figure it out sooner, because when we shared to each other like the games and stuff that we had been playing the most and stuff like that, that was the game I played the most in the PS5, and for good reason too. I spent over 60 hours playing this game across the single player, across online. This game is quintessentially one of the best Street Fighter games and one of the best fighting games I've ever played. This is so freaking crazy, though, because this is the first time inside of the series where they actually have like an open world sort of like aspect. You take your character, go through different portions of like Metro City and stuff, and like different portions around the world where you have to basically go through, meet different fighters, unlock different like costumes based upon different favors and all this other stuff. I love the improvements they've made with this game over Street Fighter V. I didn't have a chance to play Street Fighter V up until the actual fixes and everything else, because that game was so rough at launch. There was hardly anything like a big single-player content in that game. But comparing that to Street Fighter VI, from the get-go, you had so much stuff you can get to dive into. That big old meaty, like 40-hour, like single-player, like experience that I went through. And on top of that, battling against other people with your creator character online, the battle hub stuff was so freaking funny, because you were taking like different monstrosities that you're like these monstrous like freaking fighters and stuff, and you're using like different types of moves and stuff from like pre-established characters. Like that game Street Fighter VI, the single player mode, you get to use certain moves and stuff from like the other fighters, right? You add it onto your move set, and then you just try to work things and try to experiment with things. And that was some of the most frustrating, also some of the more rewarding things about this battle thing with like the creative characters in the battle hub, is you would have all these different like random ass characters and stuff that you would try to beat. Like some people like just created like different characters, like with Goku from like Dragon Ball, or they created like these like weird old monstrosities with these big old heads and stuff like that, and like small arms, and like freaking like just making it look like some crazy thing. And my creator character was kind of like that too, to where he had this big round head, right? He had these these green, like yellowish green eyes and stuff. He had a goatee, and then like his arms were like small and stuff like that, and his legs were like kind of like big, elongated and shit. But oh my god, just playing the online for that was pretty fun, pretty funny. What was also fun was learning different characters like move sets, like how they played. Like another thing I could attribute to Street Fighter VI is it introduces you to play other fighters' play styles without having to go individually inside of the arcade mode and play with each character each time to try to earn experience, or go to the training mode and try to figure out, okay, what are the bread and butter moves of, say, like Cammy or something, so where I can go through, try a couple different moves, try to time the certain special after a certain combo string or whatsoever. But inside the single player mode, because you basically use like the other fighters as like sort of like your mentors and stuff, you gain their move sets, you get to battle with their styles. And that, I thought, was great in terms of introducing someone new into this series, because all the different fighters have different types of ways that they use their moves when they go through and like to establish themselves and stuff, what they're pretty much known for. Like you have the Shoto fighters, so like with Ryu and Ken, they're like Ryu's more like a balanced character, Ken's more of like a hyper, like attack sort of fighter. Or if you want some like a charge character stuff, let's say like Guile or Blanca or Honda or something, you have that. Or if you have something like, say, like anti-air, like an anti-Shoto or something like that, you go with like, let's say with Cammy or with certain like Chun-Li or like whatever. But playing against other fighters online through like the ranking mode and stuff, that could be some of the most craziest, most rewarding things you could possibly do in this game. I took my Ryu that I was playing and stuff. I won a couple different matches. And the best part about these matches, you don't have to rematch the same person over and over and over again, right? It caps with like how many matches, like how it would, like say in a professional tournament style, to where it's the best of like three sets, quintessentially, if you choose to. So you can go forth and do like the entire like round of one match, and then you have maximum of like 3 matches in a row before you go on to the next person. It's not like stuck with one person or something like that with like bad internet or like them being angry because you beat them and stuff. They want to fight you over and over and over again, you know. But the new characters inside Street Fighter VI are pretty fun to play. Like Marissa and stuff, JP, he was kind of fun. He's kind of like that tricky character and stuff that kind of like, he feels sort of like a replacement for like Bison in regards to that sort of aspects. I mean, thinking about Kimberly, she's super quick and stuff. She has that sort of like style and stuff to where it's like a bunch of different fighting styles. But other than that, though, there's so much variety, so much different things to do inside this game to where this is my number one game of 2023. The amount of fun I have playing online, the amount of creativity of using each characters in different styles and stuff. Just the replay factor is off the charts. And quite honestly, if you love fighting games, this is a must play. Whether or not it's on PS4, Xbox, on Steam, give it a shot. This definitely has a great lasting appeal to it. I know I haven't had a chance to try out the other characters that have come out for the character passes, like Rashid, the returning classic character from like Street Fighter V, or like one of the newer... Aki, that's her name. One of the newest characters, Aki and stuff, with her move sets. But if you want to burn some time between now and Tekken 8, when that eventually comes out...
Got a month.
Yeah. By all means, get that game a shot. It's one of the best fighting games.
Nice. Very cool. All right, well, Gables, without further ado, my number one game of 2023, in a year of probably the greatest year of all time in gaming. There's little nitpicks here and there on every game that I have, except for one. There's only one perfect game in the year 2023, and that's a game we didn't know existed until literally the day it was out. Hi-Fi Rush. Holy shit! Now this is a goddamn game. This is what gaming is right here. This is a game that, like, to me, that it feels like it's plucked from a different era. Like, this is like a game that if you had told me this is a remake of a PS2 GameCube era game, I would have believed you, because that's what it feels like. This is a game that should not exist, especially from a studio that, like Bethesda, like the people from Tango, the people that make Evil Within made this game. The guy that made Evil Within, that directed Evil Within 2, followed it up with this game. And it's insane to me that, like, the jump from Evil Within 1 to Ghostwire Tokyo to this and Hi-Fi Rush. And in fact, it's so different, but it's also so good. Like, the combat, the characters, the levels, the boss fights, the art style, the music, the comedy. It all just comes together in this perfect melting pot, and it's perfect. Everything is so good. The combat is awesome. It's so, I am not somebody that loves like these like hack and slash style like Devil May Cry or like even like Bayonetta, like the Platinum games, like Bayonetta 2 clicked for me, but that's kind of it for me. It's like Bayonetta 2 of like those style games, and like this clicked. I have no rhythm. Gables, I've said this for years, and I don't think no one understood it until Gables and I played Mario Wonder, and he watched me fail miserably at that one rhythm level where I just couldn't jump to the beat of a drum for like a solid 2 minutes. He's like, he jumped down. I was like, just do this. Just jump. Just do this. And I'm like, Gables, I can't do it. I don't know what you want me to do. Like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And I have zero rhythm. It makes no sense to me. It will never make sense to me. But this game doesn't care. It doesn't make the game harder or more difficult. Right. It doesn't make the game easier if you're good at, make it easier, I guess, because you can block, but it doesn't, like, you can get through this game like me with zero rhythm. The only thing it really affects is your score. And like, if you care about your score and getting like all S's and A's, then like, hey, there's that for you. But man, if you just want to like play through a fun, just have a great fucking time, this is the game for you, man. Like, all the characters you meet, like Chai, just being the lovable doofus that thinks way too highly of himself, but is also like this lovable, charming dude at the same time. Peppermint and Corsica, 808, all the other characters you meet along the way are great. There's this, the last, like, from like the last like three levels, are is just everything I love about gaming. Of a great the third level or the second the third to last level, second to last level, I guess, I don't fucking know. Anyways, that boss the second the last boss fight just is out of this world, like amazing. And then the second to last level, like where like everybody just comes together with the song that I never heard before. The band is called Joy Formidable, and the song is called Whirring. And like it's like this cutscene and this whole last like section like rush before you get to the last boss is my moment of the year. I love that whole scene, this whole cutscene, the way it flows with the music. Like I talk about, like you look at, hey, I talk about, I love music. I love the way it all works together. You look at my top three games of the year. What are the three best things about it? It's boss fights, it's music, it's characters, and the way they all come together. And that is Tyler Bate for you right there. I am all in when you have those things. And I just fucking love those parts of this game. I started like, I was like making my list and I was like, man, is Hi-Fi Rush really my game of the year? Because I was going into Zelda. I'm like, it's Zelda. Like in my head. But then when I started writing shit down, I started working on it. I'm like, it can't be. And I started replaying Hi-Fi Rush earlier last week. And I was just like, and I played Final Fantasy 16 like a few weeks ago when the DLC came out. And I was like, so I got a pretty good fresh idea about all these games in my mind. And I started replaying. I'm like, no, this is it. This is like the way the whole, like just the way everything works, where like the whole world moves to the rhythm of the music. Like the way your Chai moves, the steps he takes, the things bouncing around the world to you, your little cat buddy 808, it was literally a metronome. Like the music in the cutscenes, like the shots fired, everything just goes with the music, and it's fucking brilliant. I cannot believe how great everything just works together. It blows my goddamn mind of like how this works and how they did it, that this team did this. And the fact that this game just came out. It just was just shadow dropped. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and people were like, ooh, the only people like this game is because it is a shadow drop. I don't know, maybe. But what matters? The game's still got to fucking be good. And it's fucking good. It's the best goddamn game of 2023. Fucking Hi-Fi Rush. Play that game. If you have Game Pass, if you don't have Game Pass, what the fuck are you doing? And if you do have Game Pass, play Hi-Fi Rush. If you already played Hi-Fi Rush, play it the fuck again. It is Scott Pilgrim, the video game that I've always wanted. It's here for you. Fuck yeah. Hi-Fi Rush. Game of the year. Suck it. That's all I have. but wow. Okay. We're really done, Gables.
Yes.
Like no way to follow up. We are actually done with our top 10 games of 2023. Man, it's like I look forward to it all year round, and it's just like it feels like it comes and goes and like a boom, like a blink of the eye. But wow, holy shit. All right, well, before we get out of here, I'm just going to run through our list real fast again. Gables, you're 10 through 1 here. Gables, Advance Wars, Reboot Camp, number 9, AEW Fight Forever, number 8, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, DLC, Teal Mask, and Indigo Disc, number 7, F-Zero 99, number 6, Resident Evil 4 Remake, number 5, Mario RGP, according to my book, and that's how it's going to stay, number 4, Metroid Prime Remastered, number 3, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, number 2, Super Mario Wonder, number 1, Street Fighter 6, my 10 through 1 here, number 10, Cocoon, number 9, Dead Space Remake, number 8, Wolong Fallen Dynasty, number 7, Alan Wake 2, number 6, Spider-Man 2, number 5, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, number 4, Resident Evil 4 Remake, number 3, Final Fantasy 16, number 2, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, number 1, Hi-Fi Rush. So that will make, Gables, we only had two games in common on our list.
Yes.
We had Resident Evil 4, you had it number 6, I had it number 4. And Tears of the Kingdom. You had it at 3. I had it at 2. That makes Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, our 2023 Game of the Year. So, yeah. Makes fucking sense. Great game. So, yeah. If you got like all that, please, if you want to hear more of our thoughts throughout the year, and also all the news and everything goes on throughout the year, please like, follow, subscribe, check us out. 5-star reviews. Leave comments. Share with your friends. Tell your friends. Whatever podcast service you listen on, we're on there. Like I said, like, follow, subscribe, give us 5-star reviews, share with your friends, tell your friends. And more importantly, if you can go to YouTube and like, follow, subscribe, there's our links to in the show notes below with links to all of our social services that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, podcast services, everything that we're on. Please go there and check us out. My voice is finally, finally going nearly 4 hours later. But thank you guys for listening. I was your host. I was Tyler.
And I have been Colonel Gable. So until next time, everyone, Happy New Year.
And hey, Gables.
Yeah.
Too sweet, baby.
Too sweet, man.
Bye, guys.
See ya.